Welcome to the A News Podcast. This is episode 18 for July 1st. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Waking the Woken. This past week, Dr. Bones wrote a text entitled, Anarchists Failed Philando Castile and They Have Failed Black Americans, that covers the expanses that anarchists in the USA are failing at. The text takes some strong words towards woke anarchists, saying that if your politics can only function in radical spaces, they are worthless. If they can't keep people alive, they are garbage. Unquote. It goes on to state that in America, the police can execute a black man in front of their child and reasonably expect a jury to let them off the hook, while radicals are more concerned with the identity politics behind the cultural appropriation of food from Mexico, arguing over who's administering Facebook groups, and so on. Meanwhile, anarchists are marching in pride while the cops are showered with roses just two blocks ahead. While I don't disagree with El Doctor and find common ground in their solutions of going more hard, as hopefully all anarchists can agree, at times at least, the overarching point is the lack of a large anarchist movement in the USA. If anything, it seems to me here that the post-Trump era anarchists are winning, whatever that means. It's like the old adage, that sometimes our greatest successes come from our failures, or something like that. Because, in reality, what winning looks like in the anarchist space is not a large-scale social-political revolution, but the smaller scale of an ant preparing for the coming winter months, while the grasshopper aimlessly plays. The times have changed. This isn't 1910 Mexico, 1917 Russia, and the 1930s in Spain anymore. It's not 1969 in France, and a long way off from the 1980s and 90s of the USA. One can understand the many reasons for a lack of hope and wild-eyed gleams in radical society today, when you and your compass can have a laser-guided missile come through your bedroom window one night while you browse A News. I wish all we could do was win, but we've been losing so much that perhaps our idea of what winning looks like needs to change. Just this past week, I listened to the Intelligence Unclassified podcast from New Jersey Homeland Security about anarchist extremists. Accordingly, from their intelligence reports, the anarchist space across the USA lacks a central leadership, is largely disorganized, split into regions, and when we do attack, they are of a low level and unsophisticated nature. These critiques from our enemies in blue is certainly not new, but quite interesting to actually hear, as one can imagine having very similar good faith arguments coming from other anarchists, like El Doctor, about the current predicament. They went on to break down anarchist extremists into two distinct groups, the heroes of the day, the Antifa, and the traditional anti-capitalists. Not surprisingly, the East Coast was portrayed as peaceful, while the West Coast, not so much. With the exception of Montreal and the fact that it's a city in Canada and not the USA, the East Coast does seem like the sleep of old Father Time has dazed them off into a long slumber. Writing this editorial from the East Coast of things, I can agree that naps and nothing doing seem like the status update of the day for our unwoke anarchist friends. Yes, we've all failed and will continue to fail. This isn't grade school anymore, though, and the grit and grime of failure can hopefully, long pause, only help us pass on to something that looks like winning. And that as anarchists, we can get back to the most beautiful idea of all, anarchy.
What's new this week? Not a struggle for the refugees, but with the refugees. Anarchism at Work in Greece. This could have been put in podcasts, since it's a transcript of a 25-minute interview done by the This Is Hell podcast, which says about itself, quote, manufacturing dissent since 1996, unquote. The person interviewed is longtime Void Network member Tassos. Hi, Tassos, who discusses the phenomenon in Greece of anarchists using existing anarchist systems to support refugees. Quote, understand that this is not a project or a struggle that we do for the refugees, but with the refugees. The refugees can take care of themselves, and they can self-organize. If we help them, and if the society around them is beneficial and helpful to them, then they can establish their own horizontal assemblies and create free spaces. The only reason that the anarchists are around is to defend the neighborhood from the police and the Nazis, and from other possible problems that they cannot bear alone. It is a mutual help. It is the real practice of mutual aid. Unquote. The interview also touches on the question of violence and media coverage and the tired joke of anarchists being disorganized.
Embracing the antinomies. This is from C4SS, a site some of us view with wariness, but it's by Sean Wilbur, who is only thoughtful goodness. It's part of the C4SS Symposium on Anarchy and Democracy, if you're into that kind of thing. Quote, it should be clear that one of the key conflicts in these debates about anarchy and democracy is a struggle over the nature of anarchism. And it is probably safe to say that nearly all anarchists wrestle with the difficulties of defining that term. Part of the difficulty is that anarchism is simultaneously a kind of system and a matter of tradition. It is at once a political or anti-political ideology, a social scientific approach, and a body of practices that have emerged within and sometimes against a particular set of social movements. It is no surprise, then, when our discussions of anarchist theory and practice oscillate between, on the one hand, attempts to show logical consistency between given practices and established principles, and on the other, appeals to the practices of certain pioneers. When anarchist thought is vital, we should expect the two aspects to work together, since ideally anarchism should never become either simply a theoretical construction or a matter of merely copying past practices. At its best, anarchist thought uses elements of tradition to increase freedom in the present, while new contexts in the present cast new light on the insights of the past. But we should probably be honest and admit that we do not always know quite how to achieve that mix. Unquote. It is a partial positive response to a piece by Gabriel Amadej, who Wilbur says begins to achieve a good balance.
Anarchists failed Philando Castile and they have failed Black Americans. This is from Gods and Radicals by Dr. Bones, and as the title makes clear, refers to the latest heartbreaking and enraging murder by cop on camera. It is angry, understandably, an emotional appeal for anarchists to do something about the centuries of racism in the U.S., and a rant about what some anarchists spend time thinking about instead of these life-or-death issues. It's too bad that it plays into the same definition of racism as a black-white dynamic, or deaths by cop as the only kind of racist murder worth getting upset about. And it's too bad that it seems to be partially responding to the murderer getting acquitted. But his conclusion seems correct to me. It is indeed hard to deal with the fact that anarchists are basically powerless against, and indeed part of, the biggest problems in our world. Quote, the death of Philando Castile and the relative ease at which his murderer walks free should be a resounding testament to the absolute bankruptcy of anarchism as it exists today, its unequivocal failure to provide anything besides charity work and amateur therapy, yet here we are worrying about how upset people might get if we dare to question their tactics, too busy debating minutiae in theoretical journals to stop what will surely be the next corpse from hitting the pavement. Right now, there is no anarchist movement. There are real people with flesh and blood doing things and other people wishing they were doing anything. Unquote.
An Anarchist Guide to the 2017 G20 Summit in Hamburg. From Crimethink, this is a schedule of planned resistance to G20 held in July in Hamburg, Germany. July 2nd, there will be a, quote, wave of protest, unquote. The 5th will be street theater. The 6th is called Welcome to Hell. The 7th, a city strike is planned, and on the 8th, a massive march. Also listed are other campaigns and calls to action, including one noting that some media publicized a Leninist communist group. Finally, there is a list of Crimethink's articles on previous G20 actions.
Return to post-anarchism. From Ding Politique, the blog of Duane Roussel, author and advocate of the idea of post-anarchism as something distinct from post-left anarchism, comes this complaint that post-anarchism has not been taken seriously or understood properly. Quote, "It was the secondary benefit of post-anarchism, its actually held position, which only began to appear in more solid form after its critique, that did something interesting. First, it claimed that being is multiple. It is not only good or bad, and moreover, it is not repressed absolutely by some external unitary site of power. It was conceived much like the Freudian drives, instincts, or the id. It does not know about good or bad, and it does not care about contradiction. Being is also active, and it has a power too. If we follow our Freudian analogy, then we might say that being is more powerful than all the other forces of the psychical apparatus, but it is also the most hidden, the dark part of the psyche. In other words, being itself seems to influence the world of power, the world of words, and so on, and, moreover, the latter seems more composed by the former than vice versa. This raises all kinds of problems, such as, for example, the possibility that authority was the innate construction of being rather than merely that which contained it. Second, post-anarchism claimed that politics, and moreover power, was everywhere. This means that the only logical position is tactical struggle here and there, everywhere, without an overarching revolution." Unquote.
Taking on the G8 in Scotland, July 2005, a retrospective. From CrimeThink, this is a retrospective article on the 2005 G8 resistance, and unfortunately it's symptomatic of an issue with CrimeThink in general, one with rhetoric that is especially glaring after the frustration expressed by Dr. Bones. Quote, "The 2005 protests took place years after the heyday of anti-summit protesting, after the triumphant victory over the WTO in Seattle in 1999, and the courageous struggles against the IMF in Prague in 2000, and the FTAA in Quebec, and the G8 in Genoa in 2001. Yet the mobilization in Scotland showed that it was still possible to challenge the rulers of the world on their home turf. Anarchists confronted the forces of the world's 8 most powerful nations right outside their gala gathering, shutting down highways, tearing down fences, and almost preventing their meeting altogether. The attacks that fundamentalist bombers carried out in London the same week looked cowardly in comparison." Unquote. What exactly is a victory again?
Being the submedia. An interview from Mask Magazine with submedia's Frank Lopez. Quote, "I don't know how to fight it. Our hope is always that we can own the infrastructure that carries our films to the public and that our website will always live there. But the reality is that less and less people come to the website, more and more consume them through social media platforms. I'm open to ideas for how to break from that because in the end, the wires don't belong to us. The large companies that control the algorithms don't belong to us. Right now, we have to use them. It's a really shitty situation to be in. We have a lot of comrades who work in the tech sector, and I hope they don't get bought out completely, that they instead spend time doing the good work of trying to figure out ways to break from the online media monopolies. Back in the 90s, the slogan of Indie Media was, be the media. Don't just hate the corporate media, be the media. We took that call seriously. But being the media in this new reality means we are the media inside of these fiefdoms that are very feudalistic, and we're once again fighting this battle. The next big battle for us to fight is how to make information be free. I know it sounds trite, but it is something that's needed." Unquote. I appreciated the link to Freelance, We Want Your Soul.
Individualist Anarchism versus Social Anarchism. From C4SS, this is a brief entry in their Confluence on Democracy and Anarchy by Wayne Price. Unsurprisingly, he is pro-democracy. This piece is a response to one by Grayson English, one of the majority of these writers who are critical of democracy. Quote, "Of course, Grayson does not deny the existence of society or societies, large or small, but he regards them as secondary to individuals, something to be tolerated and used as little as possible, until they can be, periodically, dissolved. As a description of reality, this is false. There are and can be no individuals without society. Grayson cannot think without using language, a social product. A child's sense of self is developed through his or her interaction with others, from infancy onwards. Grayson's vision is like saying that a waterfall does not really exist because it is composed of water drops. The drops do the falling, but supposedly not the river's water. He says that only individuals act, but not collectives. But take the famous example of a group of men moving a piano. Who is moving the piano? If each one acts completely autonomously, will the piano be moved? This is a model for any sort of productive activity from hunter-gathering on to today, no matter how decentralized or crafts-like an anarchist technology would be." Unquote.
First International Conference of Anarchist Geographies and Geographers, ICAGG, Geography, Social Change, and Anti-Authoritarian Practices. From the website icagg.org, the website for the conference, this post cites a, quote, flourishing of anarchist geographies, unquote, and suggests a conference to explore them. Quote, in light of the flourishing of anarchist geographies, we propose to organize an independent international conference to be repeated in different countries every 2 or 3 years to create a space for scholars and militants interested in these topics to enjoy a deep and fruitful exchange and present an opportunity for those interested in anarchist geographies and rooted in broader social movements internationally to exchange ideas and make meaningful connections. The choice of doing the first conference in an Italian small town like Reggio Emilia, where an established local anarchist movement already promoted events and publications on anarchist geographers, is instrumental to the capital tasks of continuing a discussion among scholars and militants from different linguistic and cultural areas, and ensuring discussions involve grassroots movements and militant situations outside the academy.
Can't stop the chaos. Autonomous resistance to the 2007 G8 in Germany. From CrimeThink, this is part of their retrospective of big summit actions over the past decade or so. This one is a revised version from an article in Rolling Thunder number 5. Quote, but the powers that be learned from their mistakes, unable to beat the demonstrators. They joined them instead to lead them astray. In Scotland in 2005, the bizarre menage a trois of Bono, Tony Blair, and anti-globalization NGOs created the Make Poverty History March. In this guise, they tricked the vast majority of protesters into showing up in white, the color of surrender, and marching in a parade through the half-empty downtown of Edinburgh, far from the summit. The theme of the parade was begging the G8 leaders to take action on their behalf, the opposite of direct action. This government-organized farce was a symbolic inversion of their defeats in Birmingham and Genoa. Unquote.
Things you can do with your Canada Day weekend that won't make the government particularly stoked. For those of us not from Canada, you might not have picked up on the fact that this year is one of their big celebrations for what is apparently a corollary to July 4th, or their centennial. So from the NoCanada.info site comes this post on how not to join in on national celebrations, timely for those subject to 4th of July havoc, among others. The actions range from music to protests to whatever you can imagine doing.
Media. June 11th, 2007 Roundup. This is a downloadable pamphlet that collects statements by anarchist prisoners, most already posted on ANews this month, and report backs, communiques, and photos of actions for June 11th this year. Quote, on June 11th, we held a picnic in a public park as a celebration of anarchist action and in honor of our imprisoned fighters. Beneath black flags, people talked, wrote cards to anarchist prisoners, and shared food. Some comrades prepared a songbook and performance of classic anarchist songs. Anarchists in the early 20th century often held picnics on holidays of their own creation, and we hope to carry on this tradition. As the world becomes increasingly dominated by the technological mediation of the internet, it is imperative that we create spaces in which we can be together, face to face, without the noise of alienated chatter. There is, for us, a clear connection between the walls that separate us from our imprisoned comrades and the walls that separate us all from each other. We celebrate with joy the crumbling of both. Unquote.
Free Radical Radio Audiobooks, The Infernal Desire Machines of Dr. Hoffman. This is about an hour long. Read by September. Angela Carter was an English feminist and magical realist author of short stories. She was best known for her collection called Nights at the Circus. Ryder's contextualization of this reading quotes Milan Kundera saying, among other things, quote, if I were asked the most common cause of misunderstanding between my readers and me, I would not hesitate. Humor. Unquote. But, you know, he was writing before the era of the smiley emoticon, so we don't have that problem anymore. Ryder goes on. Quote, in The Infernal Desire Machines of Dr. Hoffman, Angela Carter carries a dark laughter as the current flowing beneath the wild seas of her imagination and machinations. To actually read, we must suspend moral judgment, we must suspend our notion of reality, and open ourselves to the possible. Unquote.
NYC Anarchist Black Cross, Illustrated Guide to Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War, version 12.4, released. Another downloadable PDF with mini bios, photos, addresses of some people worth supporting, organized by movement, including Black New African, anarchists, indigenous, hacks and information leaks, Green Scare and Earth and Animal Liberation, Other National Liberation, GI War Resistance, Anti-Police, and finally Virgin Island. Also includes information on how to write a letter and how to stay safe. Helpful.
Podcasts. The Final Straw Radio, August 19th, Solidarity with Prisoners, Ben Turk of IWOC. An hour of many, many announcements, including info on Kevin Rashid Johnson, QT Lug, Self-Protection Class, J20 Benefit with Anarcho-Doom Band Thou, Stonewall, DIY screen printing, books to prison packing, etc., and lots more. These are not in order of importance in any way. Sean Swain reflects on his options now that a federal prisoner has successfully sued for his ability to have children, with the argument that reproduction is a part of his religious freedom. He continues to be funny and self-effacing. Bursts interviews Ben about the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, or EWOC. EWOC is the most exciting project of the Industrial Workers of the World, or IWW, the syndicalist labor union, in quite a while. To be clear, the IWW includes some anarchists, but is not anarchist itself. Quote, last year was a huge time for radical organizing around the U.S. Prisoners from around the country participated in the September 9th National Prisoner Strike, the first of its size and scope that we've seen. This event mobilized individual prisoners and also sprang from groups like the Free Alabama Movement and its sister pushes in other carceral states. Anarchist Black Cross chapters, the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, and also just lots of unaffiliated prisoners. Now we have what could be called a hard law and disorder administration in the White House talking about increasing funding and support for COPS, further militarizing the border and terrorizing residents, reviving the 1980s-style war on drugs and other repressive actions. In this context, it feels necessary for those who have a different vision of the world to push back and keep pushing. Unquote.
Anarchy Radio, 6/27/17. An hour long. John's back from Italy sounding rested and appreciated. He talks about his itinerary, plugs his publications, complains about Free Radical Radio reading ITS communiques, reads a letter he wrote to Earth First complaining about their joining the bandwagon of anti-fascism, names Antifa an ideology, which is always funny coming from him. After the break, he has an attack of anthropology, children poisoned in traffic, zombie deer, vaccines not working, etc. One of the sound engineers breaks in with a clarifying question that should happen more often. Interestingly, there seems to be a real difference in the tone of complaints when JC has had a break.
Episode 7, Anarchist Extremists, A National Perspective. From February, this is a podcast from Homeland Security in New Jersey, and it's 8 minutes of fun. Not quite as good as Hoover talking about the leaders of the group called the Women's Movement, but decent for today's more media-savvy feds.
Topic of the week, changes through aging. We've done a couple of topic of the weeks on changes in life. This one is specifically about how you've changed your behavior, your actions, what you can not do anymore. What do you want to not do anymore? What do you want to do now that you couldn't before? What do you like doing now that you never used to? This is partly inspired by some of us who've been around for a long time doing all kinds of activism, including anti-fascist, anti-racist, Take Back the Night marches. One of us was around for the first Dyke March in the Bay Area, etc. But the fact that we don't do that much anymore means that people don't see us as involved or informed at all. But that's not the question. Just one of the inspirations for the question. The question is, how have you changed? How have your friends changed? Does it surprise you? If you haven't changed yet, how do you want your actions and behavior to change as you age? Or do you want to stay exactly the same as you are right now? So, who am I talking to today?
You're talking to Chisel.
Chisel. I guess for me, this boils down to I wouldn't say that I'm physically more afraid, but I definitely, you know, because I've had injuries and damage over the past 20 to 30 years, I would say that I'm much more conscious of how engagement in violence, especially in the context of the street, is scarier. Like I feel the permanence of it. You know, for those who don't know, 30 years ago I was stabbed, and the injury from the stabbing continues to plague me today. I've had to have surgeries since it happened to repair it, and it just, you know, my body is frail in a way that it wasn't when I was younger, And I think that that physical frailty, like, you know, my hands hurt most. They don't hurt, but I can tell that in the future they're going to hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, so I guess my body has changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're reminding me of times fighting Nazis when I would put on a leather jacket and feel like I could, you know, take on everything. And even, you know, nothing would stop me. A bullet, I could handle whatever. And it, to me, it's less clear, you know, the difference in the physicalness, although clearly things have changed and I have arthritis in my shoulder and, you know, like things are different now, but it almost feels more like I feel so much like things in the street don't make the kind of change that I want, that, you know, that the examples that I've seen are of things not working, not just like on a political level.
For you, it's not about your body.
It's less about my body and more about sort of, you know, I don't trust the relationships that I've made in the streets any more than any other kind of relationship. You know, it's like, it's that level of like, wow, things really don't work. Things really don't make a difference. And that's, I mean, and there's other reasons to be in the street. Like, it feels good and it's fun and, you know, whatever. And you're, there's other reasons that.
Yeah. The thing I always say about that kind of activism is that it perhaps does not make a difference, but it's important that at some point in your life you do it.
Yeah,
because,
oh, for sure. Yeah,
because if you don't take a stand at some point in your life, it's something you'll regret for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. And there's a huge difference between like not having taken a stand and being post stand to the, you know, post, and it's not even post, whatever, it's like that particular kind of taking it. But yeah,
well, but this is why I sort of avoid using language like it, we don't make a difference, or it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. Because in point of fact, it absolutely meant something for me and for you at the time.
Yeah.
But of course it didn't, you know, we're not Mighty Mouse. We didn't, you know, we didn't stomp our feet on the planet and the planet, you know,
yielded to us.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yield to us. Yeah. I mean, so maybe this is actually maybe what part of this question was trying to get at, was sort of what are the stands? Yeah, how do we talk about it if we're not talking about making a difference? Or I don't know.
Well, the framing exercise is important, and I think it would look a lot more like. I mean, I guess I turn to the Greeks again. You know, the Greeks had all these really great pat answers when it came to this sort of topic. So you know, Americans. When the void people came to the U.S. and Americans would ask some questions, a common question sort of was like, "We're soft, fragile, injured people. Mm-hmm. How do you know? Like in Greece, it seems like you all talk tough all the time. How do you heal? How do you leave space for healing?" And their response was fantastic. And if anything, they're a couple years older than us. And they basically said that we heal on the street, that basically like re-entering combat is the way,
is the way
in which we heal, which, you know, of course we're not Greek but I do prefer that answer to the answer that is sort of implied in the question.
Absolutely.
Which is that, you know, we spend a lot of time licking our wounds and we basically surround ourselves with a whole bunch of people who do likewise.
Yeah. The idea of, I mean, I remember hearing years and years ago about somebody who had been to Africa and was an older, she was a professor, and she talks about how social everybody is, and that homes are not a place to be, they're a place to sleep, and it's really just a bed, and all of your time you spend out with other people, and obviously the Greek example is reminiscent of that, like that there, that home isn't a place you go to be sort of safe and taken care of, home is just a bed, and that's a really fantastic, you know, like I wish the U.S. had a culture that was more like that. And maybe there's something that we could be doing to encourage that in some way. But I don't think I am, because I tend to be pretty antisocial. So, yeah, I don't feel like I'm part of the solution in any way.
Well, there's a couple of things there. You know, we have roads built for tanks to roll down them. So that limits a big way in which people used to hang out with each other.
That's true. Everything's commercialized, yeah.
And you're sure almost all public space is commercialized.
Yeah.
For a number of months, we tried to do a weekly assembly, and we were lucky enough to live in a town that has a park that's sort of reclaimed from the university, and it's a famous park called People's Park. And we tried to sort of meet there once a week, which was perhaps too ambitious. But You know, it's maybe it was once a month.
Nope, it was once a week.
Yeah.
Oh, no. No, yeah, no, I don't remember either. Yeah. But it was a great effort, and I think we should have kept it up. And
yeah, the only problem is that it was just our close circle of friends rather than... It just it needed to be, you know, four or five clicks of people rather than just the one.
Yeah.
I love the effort, but the combination of roads built for tanks and single-family dwellings seems to pretty easily defeat that.
And gentrification and commercialized space and that whole...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they figured out... I mean, I'm not sure if it was just city planners or a combination of... I guess this is what they mean by biopolitics.
One of many.
They figure this thing out real early. Yeah. But I guess the other, of course, clear thing about aging is that what it is that I enjoy doing with my time in general is a lot different. So, you know, not to put too fine of a point on it, but I am not desperately trying to find new people to sleep with.
Yeah, that's a huge difference.
And, you know, I recall a time not so long ago where that was a pretty high priority.
Being part of your life, yeah.
And maybe I'm just putting too fine of a point on it. I mean, other people might say that, yeah, I guess I know that for other people that the question of loneliness is also attached to this question of aging.
Yes.
And, you know, again, we're extremely lucky that I am extremely lucky. I'm surrounded by people. I have... as many, if not more, people around me than I would like to. And, but I know damn well that you know, if situation were just a little different, that loneliness would be a real problem. And so that's a lot of what I think about when I think about aging. You know, nowadays, the sort of elderly population, like, you know, just it's just nothing but horror stories.
Yeah, we have a lot of examples of, you know, watching people get older and either, you know, break up with long-term partners or their partners die or, you know, or they, yeah, everybody fucking, it's the consequences of these nasty splits. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people think that people go off and have lives, you know, then they stop being anarchists and everything's great. But sometimes what people going away and not being anarchists means or not being around anymore doesn't mean that they're having a great life. They just don't have friends anymore. Yep. And it's not specific to anarchists. Obviously, this is a problem in the greater culture for sure. But
I mean, for us, it feels like this is a much more gendered problem than it maybe is in the wider culture. You know, at least in my experience, men, as they age, become cranky and they fuck up and they no longer have the
social network to,
yeah,
to help them get over it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not totally sure that's true, but, it does seem like you on social media, even you hear a lot of men of all kinds talking about being lonely much more than women do. And I'm not sure if that just is that women don't talk about it that way.
Sure.
Or if it's, yeah, it's hard to know that stuff.
The other thing is I guess I, you know, I made a choice, or maybe it wasn't a choice, it was a personality thing very early on to be a conflictual person, to always be involved in conflicts. And while, of course, I still notice them today, I am much more, I'm not committed to most of the conflicts I'm involved with nowadays. I mean, again, to bring up social media, a lot of the conflicts I'm involved with are sort of silly social media-based conflicts. But you know, part of the thing about Facebook in particular is that, you know, you really end up getting siloed. And so I do feel like a lot of the time, topics that people should absolutely be disagreeing with me about, I tend to blow off the people who do, or just not want to engage in the way in which they're disagreeing. And most people who engage don't disagree.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing, but that's sort of a separate topic to talk about social media. But I will say that my relationship to conflict has changed a great deal. There's a person right now who's really begging to pick a fight with me over email. And I just have no interest.
Yeah, that's a total change in age. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, an experience. Like, you have played out pretty much every possible option with conflict, and it's not interesting anymore. Or
well, I still enjoy conflict, but
the rare, like, yeah, it's rarer that you're going to find something that you haven't done before and that you don't entirely know how it's going to work out. And yeah,
I'm extremely bounded about it. That's for sure. And of course, most people who want to fight you, they think that it's
brand new and unique and
yeah,
all special this time. Yeah, I mean, that burnout is a total, I mean, that's one way to talk about it. That's one name for it. And that's an absolute thing that is why it's really nice to have young people around, even if they're fucking frustrating, because they do challenge us to see things in a different way and to remember that everything is different this time, even if we feel like we've been through it a million times before, et cetera.
Yeah, actually, I have a roommate who's about 10 years younger than me. And just about a week ago, I was sort of lamenting something that was pissing me off, but I was just like sort of vaguely lamenting it, and they immediately escalated it. And I was like, oh, God. I guess that's what I get.
You know? That's totally what you get. Yep.
Well, thank you very much, Chisel, for having this conversation with me.
Thank you so much. I do try to fight. It's the right to fight. Do try. The Weekly Anarchy 101 Question and Some Answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org, a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. It has nearly a decade of questions and answers. The question this week is, what is right and wrong with the idea of a gradual transition to anarchy, or good or bad, or workable and not workable about such an idea? It was from another question on Brexit, and the edit is, to clarify a bit, by gradual transition, I intend to include intentional and progressive in the strict sense of the word, i.e. there is a progression, that the transition, as the left, among others, promotes it, will be done by people who are over time making better and better decisions about how to be in the world. There are probably other implications involved in this idea that I take for granted, so I welcome help in clarifying the assumptions implicit in this very common understanding of how change will happen. Answer number one. Off the top of my head, for people who have given up on the idea of the revolution, anarchy does look like a process that develops and, one hopes, expands over time. It is a more soberly realistic roadmap. For people who desire freedom and a total break with the current state of things, a gradual transition feels like a compromise, like half measures. It is an unacceptable path from here to there, wherever there is. Gradual transition allows more people who might be initially wary of some of the extremes of anarchy to experience small moments of anarchy in day-to-day life, to play with them, process them, to incorporate aspects into their day-to-day lives while not being ripped completely from their comfort zone. And fourth, a gradual transition creates an open door to the would-be politicians and bureaucrats to come in and manage anarchy or worse. At the same time, it lulls would-be insurgents into a sense of comfort with carrots of convenience as well as the stick of losing what has become expected. Answer number two. I find this particular notion of gradual slash intentional transition problematic at best. Transition connotes movement. However, the way progressivist ideologies use this term is completely abstract, dead, since it never lived at all. Transitioning relates and speaks of continuous replacing, ever-shifting qualities, tones, textures, contours, conditions, incessantly fluctuating, dynamic, ephemeral, and thus always perspectival, you know, living. This perspectivity can probably be better spoken of in terms of where rather than what in our clunky thing-oriented language, English. So, when we speak of transitioning, we may first wish to ask, from where to where? In my experience, at least two unspoken presuppositions are often hard at work from the get-go. One is that the two wheres, the present now and a future place, are somehow equivalent. The concrete and the ideal no place as of yet are presented as equally perceptible and thus comparable according to some meta-schematic. Another and more subtle presumption is the belief that one may indeed get there from here. This, in turn, poses more problems. One, it assumes a unified nature or world through which each of us makes our journey. And two, this world has no say, and we carve out each of these states from this silent cadaver. Three, that here and there represent two states, as in static, stasis. And thus, for a progressivist ideology, beginning slash end, cause slash effect, means slash ends. Another story. Perhaps our lives are better spoken of in terms of near and far from where we live now, our perspective now. Can one sense such an idealized there from this lived here? I remain skeptical, to say the least. Yet one more count against this type of progressivist worldview lies in a totalitarian demand for general consent in order to exist at all. For the ideal to become reality, everyone must think what I think so as to be considered an anarchist, one who's capable of envisioning true anarchy and thus able to reach real anarchy someday, or at least provide a map to it. Of course, embedded in this are many other further implications given the humanistic pedigree at work, but I'll leave off for now. As always, if you don't like these answers or have questions of your own, visit anarchy101.org and join the conversation. This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel, written by Jackie, editorial written by a collective member, produced and narrated by Chisel and a friend. We thank Aragorn and me for my help, for our help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org to learn more. Books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material at littleblackheart.com, including t-shirts and news and up-to-the-minute commentary at anarchistnews.org.